You are tuned in to Lightly on the Ground Radio on WRIR LP 97.3 and worldwide at WRIR.org. We're exploring our food system, which the Food and Nutrition Information Center of the USDA's National Agricultural Library describes as everything from farm to table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. I'm Sunny Gardner, and our guest today is Kim Hartke. Kim, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you coming from with this subject?
Well, Sunny, I'm a health-conscious consumer. I got involved in the local foods movement as a result of trying to solve some personal health issues that my husband and I were struggling with.
And I know that you're associated with the Weston A. Price Foundation. How does that fit into this?
Well, I became a member of the Weston A. Price Foundation when I was looking for lifestyle answers to resolve the health challenges, and instantly became very excited about the concept of healing with food as a therapeutic remedy. And within about 3 or 4 months, I was a chapter leader, and then after my first conference, I called the president of the foundation. I said, I have a PR background, and I think we need to put these ideas forward through the media to reach more people. And luckily, she agreed to hire me as the publicist for the foundation. And today, I represent not only Weston Price Foundation, but their Farm-to-Consumer Legal Defense Fund that they started, which works on food politics issues, lobbying, legislative issues, and court cases related to food and freedom. Their mission is to protect the right of citizens in America to trade directly with the local farmer of their choosing.
So, although you are a member of the Weston A. Price Foundation, I know that you have thoughts of your own, and I wanted to give you a chance to separate out things that might be policy issues or declarations and statements and planks that the Price Foundation has versus your own personal experience and things where they simply have not made a decision.
Right. I mean, the Weston Price Foundation has dietary guidelines. Those are our only planks per se, but we do work on a lot of various issues. We do put out action alerts on all kinds of legislation related to food and farming and nutrition and even the practice of health, such as health freedom legislation, things like that. So today I'd like to talk to you mostly from my own personal insights, things that I've gleaned from doing this work for about 6 years, rather than speaking as a spokesperson for the organization, because even within our membership, there may be a wide variety of viewpoints on any given issue. Which is why we try to stick with the basic nutritional recommendations. That's our policy. You know what I'm saying?
So I met you when you were in town recently at the General Assembly. And we were talking about some bills that would free up farmers to actually make a little better profit, maybe provide the customers with a wider variety of products. Tell me about that.
Well, agricultural policy in the state of Virginia has pretty much been written by the big players. These are the people that the government considers our stakeholders in legislation. And what my visit to Richmond was about is that there's an emerging market of small farms and homesteaders that are starting to do direct sales to their neighbors, their community, at farmers markets, what have you. And these people are woefully underrepresented in the decision-making process in Richmond. So we were there advancing something called the Freedom to Farm Without Fear Act, or the Bonita Bill, based on the plight of a farmer in Fauquier County, Martha Bonita, whose zoning board has decided to target her and go after her with harassing, threatening fines and penalties and even criminal sanctions if she so much as, you know, steps out of line. It's had the effect of shutting down a very small farm, a little boutique farm. And so what we're trying to do is add more insight into the Virginia Right to Farm Act, which does exist, insights such as a farmer should be allowed to sell ancillary items in their on-farm store, such as bottled water, postcards, art, bric-a-brac, you know, artwork from local artists. They shouldn't only be allowed to sell what they personally produce. And so the bill would allow them up to 50% of their revenue to be on these ancillary items. For instance, I know of a farm store in Northern Virginia that sells the wares of other farmers in her neighborhood, maybe farmers that don't have a store on property, but they make wonderful cheese or they have a cowboarding program.
Right. So one of the issues that I understand is that often farmers at this point are selling their raw materials. They're selling the commodities at a very low price, as low as someone can talk them down to. Whereas if the farmers are actually allowed to do something with the products, like instead of just selling like the commodity corn, they're actually able to make tortillas or cornbread or popcorn or things like that, then they would actually be able to, using their own energy and their own time, increase the value of what they have to sell. A technical snafu occurred, so I will reiterate what was said. Kim has recording equipment and recorded part of the show where I sound correctly like I'm talking on a mobile phone. What we were talking about is this. Both conservative and progressive thinkers have met over the freedom to farm, and we have met eye to eye over the matter of what should be allowed in our food. We want to know if someone has tinkered with the genetic code of a plant our animals will eat. We care about long-term genetic diversity, dependable seed, saving our heirloom foods, eating well and naturally, the freedom to be entrepreneurs. Fundamental to that is agreeing that producing seed is a sacred trust. Seedsmen must be free to assure that their seeds are free from trespass by a patented spawn of corporate entities. Now, consider the fact that we are debating a bill in Virginia that would allow minimally processed food to be sold from family farms, but only with a label stating that it was produced without state inspection, along with contact information for the farm. Yet we are faced every day with grocery store shelves laden with hundreds of foods and other products that contain genetically engineered plant material, unidentified and unlabeled. And I ask Kim, what do you think about that?
It just seems like the emperor has no clothes, does it not? I mean, you're talking about the mass production food that really should be carefully monitored and inspected we should be protected from is getting a pass, and then the little Aunt Matilda's pie is a suspect of being contaminated.
There's some humorousness about it, but I'm not sure that it makes any sense. What do you see any logic that anyone could see? Is there some logical way to explain this? It's
no.
Beyond us.
No. Well, you know, a logical way to explain it is that the average citizen has no power and no say-so. Even the average little farm has no influence. They don't even have a seat at the table. So if they try to do something truly organic and truly wonderful, they're the ones that get the regulatory heat, whereas the guys that are playing the big game in the conventional system, they get away with a whole lot that, unbeknownst to the consumer, they get away with. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I was talking with an organic certifier and seedsman and scientist the other day, and this is something I was pretty unaware of. Maybe I was repressing it. But what I heard is that the reason that there is not scientific data and studies that are available to the public and to common scientists about the health issues surrounding GMO foods is that the manufacturer of the GMO genes and the scientists, the corporate scientists who are doing this, are protected by the company, and so we can't even study the material and release studies about what ramifications the food might have, what effect the foods might have on test animals or human beings.
That's interesting. It's not surprising.
Does the Weston A. Price Foundation have a position or a stance on any of these issues that we're talking about?
Well, Jeffrey Smith of the Institute for Responsible Technology has spoken at our conference. He is a friend of ours. He's the author of the new movie Genetic Roulette, and he's written a book, I believe it's by the same name. So he's an expert on the risks coming from GMO crops, both to livestock and to humans. And I guess there is research out there because I think all of his work is based on actual research, whether it was done here and suppressed or whether it was done abroad. And, you know, there is a USDA scientist who's been lately trying to get the attention of the government about his research into GMOs and how it's really very hazardous. So the fact of the matter is Monsanto has made sure that their attorney is the head of food safety at the USDA. He's been in and out of the government for years now, basically doing Monsanto's bidding there. So this is the problem. We have an inside guy running the government policy that pertains to his company. So that's one of the reasons that we have the situation we have.
I received an email recently stating that farmers are not concerned about GE contamination and that it's actually urban activists who are making all the hoopla about genetically modified seed. And it, I think it comes down to the labeling issue, but what they're saying is that the urban leaders of the organic movement are stoking irrational fear that it's not the farmers who are concerned. Do you know any farmers who are concerned about genetic contamination?
Well, like any other interest group, farmers are far from being a monolithic voting bloc.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of diversity of opinion. And there's actually a lawsuit with many, many parties, I think upwards of 40 parties. Yeah, Osgata versus Monsanto is a court case that is trying to make sure that Monsanto cannot sue farmers if their fields get contaminated. And many of the parties to that lawsuit are indeed farmers. So this article you're referring to is mischaracterizing and stereotyping the farmer viewpoint, because there, I read the article that you're talking about, and he said that there's never been an instance where a farmer has had a problem because of their crops being contaminated. But really, the instances that are of great concern to farmers is when Monsanto's seed falls on their field and then Monsanto sues them for patent infringement. And that's the real reason for this loss, this court case, because Monsanto has indeed bullied farmers, intimidated farmers, taking them to court at great personal expense. A farmer in Canada named Percy Schmeiser fought Monsanto in court and actually won. So far, I guess the government hasn't said you're losing your organic certification, but Monsanto has been abusive to the farming community. You know, their seed is like the golden handcuffs. Once you commit on the dotted line to buying Monsanto seeds, it's very difficult to get away from that decision. Very little to reverse course.
Right.
So in any event, there is a wide concern amongst farmers. And in fact, in Poland right now, there's farmers doing a tractor blockade in like five different cities because of huge multinational firms trying to buy up Polish countryside to put in GMO crops. And so the local farmers are saying to their government, we don't want foreign corporations coming in here, you know, snatching up our land and then putting a crop that we don't believe in our community. So this is a protest that's been going on since, I believe, late December.
So Kim Hartke with the Weston A. Price Foundation and I were wondering what the facts are about the European Union and genetically modified products. In Nature Biotechnology in 2003, there's an article entitled, interestingly, Europe Angers U.S. with Strict GM Labeling. European Union countries require that all food and animal feed products linked in any way to transgenic crops be clearly labeled as genetically modified. Up to that point, only foods containing measurable amounts of GM DNA or resulting protein had to be given the GM label. But the new regime, starting in late November of 2002, extended labeling to end products such as sugars and oils, even when GM ingredients cannot be detected because they're physically and chemically identical to products derived from non-GM crops. Even meat suppliers who feed their animals with transgenic grain have to label their products. In an article on the European Union website, the European Commission website, Europa, it says the EU recognizes the consumer's right to information and labeling as a tool for making an informed choice. Since 1997, community legislation has made labeling of GM food mandatory for products that consist of GMO or contain GMO, and products derived from GMO but no longer containing GMO if there is still DNA or protein resulting from the genetic modification present. Those are what they have to label. The latest regulation, which was in 2003, expands that from just novel foods to actually labeling everything that has the smallest trace of GM material in it. You can see that at Europa, European Commission, DG Health and Consumers Overview, Food and Feed Safety. The most interesting part of that to me is the belief that consumers should have a choice. We're not trying to actually eliminate GM materials, but if the consumers have a choice, they may choose not to buy them, which is the fear that industry has, and industry is holding sway in our government now. The European Commission is still debating it. They don't plan to give the green light to new genetically modified crops in the coming months because it's working on an agreement on draft legislation which would allow member governments to decide individually whether to grow or ban GM plants. This is from January of 2013. They've been working on this since 2010. They're trying to unblock the decision-making by allowing some countries to use the technology while letting others impose cultivation bans. Currently, the EU rules that any GM crop approved for cultivation can be grown anywhere inside the bloc unless countries have specific scientific reasons for banning the cultivation. Only two GM crops are currently approved for cultivation in Europe, where opposition from skeptical consumers and environmental groups remains strong. That compares to more than 90 GM varieties approved in the United States and about 30 in Brazil. But
to the boss. Boys, if you're thinking she ain't sweet no more, you better be watching your back door. I got penthouse views, I'm on the cause of commotion. I wanna buy the rooster, but the dough is full. Penthouse views, I'm on the razor roof. Someone pull the lid off this chicken coop. I don't want sweet talking, I just want some rocking. I got the henhouse blues. I got the henhouse blues, I'm on the razor roof. Someone pull the lid off this chicken coop. I don't want sweet talking, I want some rocking. I got the henhouse, I got the henhouse, I got the henhouse blues.
That was Molly O'Brien singing the henhouse blues. I just had to lighten this up a little bit. You are listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio, and our guest today is Kim Hartke from the Weston A. Price Foundation and from Planet Earth.
There have been GMO crop failures, and the way it's happened, they borrowed the money for the seed to begin with, and then when the crops fail, they have no way to repay the debt. So they're losing their land, they're losing their home, and often what's happened in India especially is that they've drank the Roundup that's sprayed on GMOs, which is a toxic poison, and kill themselves.
That's the way it's the cycle of abandonment of women, because men are not willing to marry a widow who is saddled with this huge debt to this corporation, because the wives inherit the debt just as they would any wealth that was left after a man died.
It's such a tragedy. It's such a tragedy. You know, the way I explained to mother about the risks of GMOs, I said, Mom, these plants are, the seeds are modified so that they will tolerate Roundup, which is something that kills every living thing. And I said, yes, these seeds may tolerate Roundup, but does the human body tolerate Roundup? In essence, we're eating these seeds that have, and plants that have been heavily sprayed with a toxic poison that's toxic to all human life. And there have been studies that show it causes organ damage and cancers and different things like this. And it's wholesale wide into our food supply now, and unbeknownst to the average consumer. Well, food being a basic necessity of life like clothing and shelter, it's very unifying. And, of course, people of all political stripes love to eat, need to eat, and of course, with our in our American culture anyway, there's a resurgence of interest in food and cooking. Executive chefs are now the new celebrities. Cooking competitions are wildly popular on television. The Emerald Show, you know, the Paula Deen Show. All these fabulous personalities that are promoting dining, food, nutrition, recipes. So, yes, it's very much a wide tent issue. And what we have in the Weston Price Foundation is a broad spectrum of political beliefs under one banner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that banner being the proper nutrition to nourish and heal the human body. And illness and disease know no politics. They affect all of us.
You're right there. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your help, Kim Hartke. Tell me where people could hear more from you and also more from the Weston A. Price Foundation.
Sure. My blog is called HartkeIsOnline.com.
Spell
that. That's HartkeIsOnline. Dot com. And also the Weston Price Foundation is Weston A Price, P-R-I-C-E .org.
Okay.
And I appreciate your time today, and I hope that it's been helpful.
I hope so too.
Meanwhile, back in the Commonwealth, small farmers and producers have been on a legislative roller coaster and are overall elated because it seems we are making progress toward freedom to farm. The Right to Farm Act, which would have expanded the definition of agricultural operations, passed the House but was laid down in the Senate. The Home Processed Food Bill, which covers inspection of food establishments and labeling of foods with the name of the preparer, passed the House and was reported from the Senate Committee on Agriculture, Conservation, and Natural Resources on a 10-0 vote on Valentine's Day. Your senator may need a reminder about how passing this bill could help small business in the Commonwealth. On Tuesday, February 19, 2013, a 75-year-old farmer from southwest Indiana began a Supreme Court case against Monsanto. This case could have a huge impact on the future of genetically modified crops and other fields, from medical research to software. At stake is whether patents on seeds or other things that can self-replicate extend beyond the first generation of the products. One side says, of course, that it could have a devastating effect on biotechnology innovation. And critics of biotechnology say that a victory could weaken what they see as a stranglehold that large seed companies have over farmers. It's led to rising seed prices and a lack of high-yielding varieties that are not genetically engineered. Something interesting to watch for those of you who watch your food supply. Lightly on the Ground Radio is a Sunny Gardner production for Richmond Independent Radio, broadcast on WRIR LP FM 97.3 and WRIR.org. I am grateful to all the volunteers at Richmond Independent Radio and to our community of donors and underwriters. Befriend us on Facebook on Lightly on the Ground Radio page, and you will know who will appear on the show and when podcasts become available. The theme music was Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth, and the incidental music was Molly O'Brien singing about those henhouse blues. I hope you'll join us again on the radio. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground. Thank you for listening.